So first of all, on Thursday, we didn't actually finish Sheni. We had set for ourselves a kind of lofty goal to address Bereishis, Rishon, and Sheni, and it wasn't really manageable in that time slot, and would be manageable in probably many more hours, but just there was one or two other points we just wanted to touch upon. We said we would finish off, so maybe if there's a chumash here, if not, we'll just mention that. I do actually also, but all right, so maybe we'll just mention a few points from Sheni that we hadn't gotten up to. Once, in terms of the Eitz HaDaas, which is itself a whole fascinating topic, and the nature of the Isser Eitz HaDaas is itself a fascinating topic, but that we can address in future years. But it's a question what the fruit was. So in popular culture, they often present it as an apple, but that's not one of the opinions in the Gemara. And it's possible that it was actually an esrog. And in fact, there are those who suggest, I think the Ramban says like this, that the esrog that we take on Sukkos, that we just took on Sukkos, was a kapara for the chait of Adam HaRishon. So it's an interesting question why we should do that. The Kurei Shlomo talks about that, don't we normally assume, when we say in the Kippur, Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, we don't want to use the symbol of our Avera as part of our Avoda. So if the Esrog really is an example of the chait of Marishon, so it doesn't seem like that's what we want to invoke in our avoda or sukkahs. So the Paras Yosef discusses this in Parsha Shmini, where it comes up in that context as well, because the egel of Aram, which seems to evoke the egel hazav, also seems to be against this principle of ein kategor nasa sanegor even more explicitly. So he explains over there in the name of some of the Sfarim that we know, as we discussed a lot over the course of Elul Tishrei, that there is Tshuva Meira and Tshuva Me'ava. And Tshuva Meira means we essentially try to run away from our mistakes. Our mistakes are not held against us. They're considered like Shkagos. And Tshuva Me'ava is better than that. Tshuva Me'ava is transformative. And it takes our averos and it turns them into mitzvos. So Aaron, in that context, was credited with tshuva me'ava. And also, as I think I've mentioned, the Bali Musar have this idea that Sukkos is a time of tshuva me'ava. Tshuva me'ava is something that can change your averos into mitzvos. So there, that transcends the principle of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. So for Sukkos, we can have a Yom Kippur, fine, we're not going to wear gold. But on Sukkos, we're going to take the esrog, and that's going to represent Tshuva Me'ava and Davka, because we all learn in elementary school about the imagery of the esrog and the lulav and the hadas and the ma'avim, the rabbos representing all of Klal Yisrael, all the different types. So too, the achdus of Klal Yisrael, it's an expression of Tshuva Me'ava, that's what makes it work. So it could be that that's a connection between Sukkos and Bereishis. You want to segue from one to the other. Maybe that's a linkage between the two. Just to mention another thought or two for that Aliyah. So the idea that Adam and Chava were told that they would die for eating from the Eitz HaDaas. So the Rambam discusses in Mor Nevuchim that the nature of the Avera changed humanity. That if humanity was going to be all holy, so then they would be able to experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu completely and directly. But the experience of sin transformed them, so that now the body became a hefsek, so to speak, became an interruption between God's presence and humanity. And that was why death became necessary, and that was what the pasuk is indicating. Okay, so I thought, just it's so important also to not let the Aliyah pass without saying a few words about Lo Tov HaYasadim Levado. Here, we're at age where maybe dating or married, It's important to take note of the theme there, that the Torah tells us that God created humanity, God created man, and then he said that it's not right for man to be alone. The Midrashim tell us that Adam had at least approached all the animals and found that there was no connection between them, and he was lacking a mate, and God says, Lo tov heyos adam levado, this is not a good way for it to be, so he'll make an ezer kenegdo. So the Ramban asks that it's interesting that you could have thought that he needed a mate anyway, because here God's creating humanity, so presumably we want the species to continue. So if we want the species to continue, he's going to need a mate no matter what. So the idea that, oh, lo tov heyos adam levado, it's not good, he should be alone, so we'll create someone. So doesn't that really skip over the main reason that we want the population to continue? So Brisker Rav thought, based on the comment of the Rambam, and the Rambam talks about the role that people have towards each other, specifically talks about the Talmud Chacham and his involvement with other people, but it's relevant to humanity in general when people engage with other people. So on the one hand, people need others around to provide them with the services they can't provide for themselves. But then he goes on to say that people need other people because they need company, they need companionship, that they're a human being who doesn't want to be alone. And he says this is as important or more important than the first reason. This is a basic human need. You know, Mark Zuckerberg has said that we're approaching the time, he's very excited that we're going to approach the time when no one ever has to be alone again. And not everyone is so excited about that, either because I think maybe it's kedai to be alone sometimes. We have to preserve some privacy left in this world. And they don't also necessarily agree that his creation is called not being alone. That's itself a topic for discussion. So that's an open issue whether he's right in what he's describing. But he seems to be addressing this basic human need that people need companionship. And therefore, if the Rambam is saying that this is as important as the first, so essentially, yes, you want the species to continue, but the whole tachlis of the species continuing is that they're able to interact with each other, and therefore to not have a mate, to not be with someone is a fundamental problem. So that is as important as creating a mate for others, for the purpose of keeping the species alive. So that was a point that the Sefer Ohel Moshe makes, that Rashi quotes the idea that we didn't want it to look like two Rishuyas, that, oh, maybe there's Adam below, and there's Kadosh Baruch Hu above, and each one has no Zog, so it's like there's two gods, one for above, one for below. So what about all the rest of the creations of the world? So the rest of the creation of the world is different because they need a mate in order to populate the world. Human beings need a mate for that, for sure, but they also need a mate for other reasons. And as he goes on to say, that this is also how we understand the whole concept of dveikus, being close to God through being close to a human being, and also the concept of shleimus, the concept of being complete through encountering someone else and through learning from someone else. That's what the Maharal writes, that until somebody gets married, so they're not fully complete, they haven't fully realized who they are, and therefore we find that there is a practice, maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk about this in a little more detail, it comes up in some of the later parashas, but there is a practice, at least among Ashkenazim, to fast on the wedding day. And the Magen Avraham and the Beis Shmuel, Masada page of the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Maharal Mintz that the idea of fasting on the wedding day, one of the possible suggestions is because Chazal say that the wedding is a day of a kapara, it's a day that there is an atonement. You can start with a fresh page, you can start with a fresh slate. So we want to take advantage of that opportunity and we want to fast like it's a personal Yom Kippur and the like. So why should it be true that the wedding day is a day when you get a whole new slate, you get a whole new page in life? So some explain, as the Maharal and others say, that a person takes on a spouse, it's a whole new existence. They become complete, and it's a whole new level of relating to reality, so it makes sense. They should be able to start fresh. Shimcha Zissel's Broid, who was the Rashid of Chevron, in his beautiful Sefer Sam Derech, so he notes that the Rambam, when he talks about the Perusha Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, the first parak, where it says "Kenevach al chaver," it sometimes sounds a little pathetic, right? Buy a friend. So we understand that "kene" probably doesn't mean buy, but it means you acquire through effort and through you invest in the relationship, and then they invest in a relationship with you. So part of why a person needs to have a relationship with other people is that he should have constructive feedback, and he should be able to be reinforced and also corrected when straying from the path that he hopes for himself. And that's one of the major values of having a relationship with other people. And sometimes it doesn't work out so well, because sometimes people don't react positively to having other people tell them what to do. But that's not what they want. They want to not have such interference. So he writes over there that ideally there's at least one relationship that should be free from that the marital relationship. So we're told, the Torah tells us, Ishto Pigufo, Parsha says, Vayul Basar Achad, they're like they're one person. So a person gets constructive feedback from his spouse, so that's going to be positive. So we find that the Parsha calls the spouse a Ezer Kenegdo, and it sounds like it's a contradiction in terms. The wife is there to help and is there to be in opposition. Kenegdo. So Chazal tell us that Zacha Kenegdo, Zacha Ezer, Lo Zacha Kenegdo. Sounds like it means that if a person is meritorious, a person is doing the right thing, so she'll be a help. And if he's not meritorious, she'll be an enemy of his. So it sounds like if he's Zocha, it's good, and if he's not Zocha, it's bad. And indeed, the Visvengel Magioni Ashas and Suvis points out that the Halachas Kitanis has a statement that we don't say a Shachiyonu by a wedding, because we don't know yet how it's going to turn out. We don't know whether it's good or bad. But as Rav Shechter has often commented, that it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a good possibility and it's a bad possibility, but they're both good. That Zacha Ezer or Zacha Kenegdo means that either way the spouse is supposed to be good for you. It's that if you're doing the right thing, so then she'll help you continue to do the right thing. And if you're doing the wrong thing, then she'll oppose you and get you to do the right thing. So either way, sometimes we need the Ezer, sometimes we need the Kenegdo, but we need both of them. And we need somebody who's going to provide both of those services and who's going to have the wisdom to know which one, when, and what time. And that's what's rooted in our very nature, in our time of creation. And we're told that this is the proper way, that the lo tov hayesodam levado, that it's not meant to be for a person to be without that, but rather there should be an Ezer Kenegdo who's going to help them perfect the image of what they're meant to be. And that's what Chazal are referring to and alluding to with those two references. Okay, so we couldn't let that second Aliyah pass without any reference to that. So it's important to include that a little bit before we go back to our Gemara. All right, so now I think we need a little memory refreshing. So we were in the beginning of Eilu Metzias, but we had got in, we had done about a block so far. We'll see how much we get done today. We are on Chav Beis Amud Aleph. And basically, our Gemara had introduced us to the concept of Yeish. And in setting up the story of Hashavas Aveda, that first we're told that we have an obligation to return lost property, unless the person was Miyayish on it, if the person has disconnected themselves from the property by giving up hope that it's ever going to come back. So then we are exempt from returning it. And that's assuming that you acquired it in that state. If you acquired it be'isr, so to speak, which could mean you stole it, or it could mean just you inappropriately picked it up when it was not, or tried to acquire it when it was not yet in the state of the Yayish. Doesn't necessarily mean you did an aveira, but it was not yet there for you to acquire. So then, even if Yayish takes place later, so then there is an obligation to return it. So that's particularly relevant to the question the Gemara had taken up on Chaval of Mibbeis, the machlokis between Rav and Abaye. The question of what about Yayish Shalomidatz? That what if you have a situation where a person would likely be Miyayish if the person knew about it? But the fact is, right now, they don't know about it. So should we say that, okay, there's a presumed Yayish even though they're not aware of it? That was the opinion of Rava. If you recall, this is the Gemara on the top of Chafala from the base. Yayish Shalom Midas, Abai Yamar Lo Havi Yayish, Rava Amar Havi Yayish. Abai's opinion, which is probably the dominant opinion, is that it's not considered to be Yayish, that we need active knowing Yayish in order for it to count. And Rava's opinion that it would be considered Yayish, and if the situation is such that it's a Yayish-like situation, even if the owner doesn't currently know about it, so then we'll call that Yayish. And Gemara went back and forth with some proofs, which gets us back to where we're up to now, which was the top of Chavez and Manalath. Everybody refreshed memory-wise, back in the sugya somewhat, in order to appreciate what we're talking about. So the Gemara, I think we had left off from the Tashma of Beis Amud Aleph, which is about 6 lines from the top, beginning of the line. 6 lines from the top of Beis Amud Aleph, the Gemara picks up Tashma. By the way, how is everybody doing in terms of the Bekiyas? Were you, are you up to here? Are you up to past here? More or less? A little bit past? Anybody far past here? Anybody? Chavdal, okay, you're pretty far past. Okay, we'll have to catch up with you. Okay, anyone else that far? I'm sorry? Chavgilmet Beis. Okay, so maybe, hopefully by next week we'll catch up with you, but then you'll be farther ahead. But hopefully we'll eventually catch up. Doesn't matter if you're ahead, because some things have more to say about them than others. Okay, so Tashma Shatov Nar Korov Eitzav Yavranov. So let's say you have a situation where the river comes and it totally drowns out all of his stuff, and his stuff gets found by somebody else. It gets put in somebody else's field. So this is now the property of the other guy. Because there's no hope in such a situation. It's basically like a tornado. You know, somebody's stuff got picked up from one place and got put in the land of Oz, so the other person has no connection. So then they can assume that there's a Yayish Bailam. So says the Gemara, Taima Dinisyaishu HaBailam, Haistama Lo. So it sounds like not because we're assuming, but because that seems to be what happened. Not because it's a Yayish Lo Midas, but that it's a Yayish Midas. So says the Gemara, Hacha Mayaskina, what's going on? Kishiyocha Lahatzil. That situation where the person could have gotten it back. As Rashi says, v'tchavasa b'metziya acheres dover sheyesh bo simen, diyocha litein simen v'yitol, modina v'dachayi l'hachzio. That this is a situation comparable to where there is a simen. So maybe it doesn't necessarily reflect on one of the situations where there's no simen, and we may have otherwise said that yeish lo midash should be yeish. So says the Gemara, Hachi, if that's true, Ema Seifa, so what about the end? But it says that if the person Tak is chasing after it, so then you do have to return it. So my area, I'm sorry, so if it's a situation where they could have saved it, so my area Maradfin, if you lay Maradfin, Nami. So why do we have to talk about them chasing? And if they're not chasing, then you should still have to return it. So hachav mayaskinan. So what's this exact situation? Bicholum lahatzal yadeyat chak. That the situation where they could get it back if they try really hard. So Rashi says here, v'yomlo yamar lahatzil lo yatzilu. And if they're not going to rush to do it, it's not going to work. Hilchach ein meradfin, therefore they're not chasing after it. Afkuri afkirinu dahyadu v'lo atzilu. So then that's a situation of hefker, because they know about it and they're not trying to save it. So in such a situation, meradfin lo ayush. Ein meradfin ayush em yayish. So if they're chasing after it, then there's no yayish. If they're not chasing after it, then we can assume yayish.
Okay, so now the Gemara has a very major sugya. I have to decide how much to talk about it, because you could really spend a long time talking about it. It won't be in the interest of our catching up. But you should be aware of some of the significance of this Gemara. So we'll just tell you some of the highlights about it. Gemara says as follows. Tashma. Ketzar amru hatorim shalomidas chumaso chuma. How do we have a situation? How was it said that somebody who takes truma without the knowledge of the bialim, the truma could be truma? Harei shiyara l'soch stei chavero. Let's say somebody goes to somebody else's field. V'likat v'taram shalobrishos. And he collected the fruits for the purposes of the balabais, as Rashi tells us. And he also took off truma from them without such permission to do so. Seyem choshesh mishum gazal in trumasa truma. So if the Bailim is upset because it's a type of gezel, it's like he's being stolen from, so then the truma is no good. But if not, then the truma is good. So how do you know which one it is? So minayin hu yodei mechoshish mishum gezel v'yim lav. How can you figure out if that's what's going on? Haresha babal habayis umatso. Let's say the... You have this very specific type of circumstance, but let's say the balabais happens to catch you while you're doing this. The amrlo, when he says to him, kelcha itzel yofos, yeah, why are you doing that? Why don't you take better ones? Oh, yeah, it's a clear endorsement of what he's doing. Sam nimtzu yofos mehen shumaso truma. So if taka, it's not just a sarcastic statement, but there are better ones that he could be taking, and then he apparently goes and does that, so then shumaso truma. But if not, so then the truma is not any good. It was just a sarcastic statement. And if the bailim then also got into the game themselves, and they also added on to it, so then the truma is definitely truma. So this statement that, oh, if it turns out there are better ones, then we see that his truma is good. So that's the Gemara, am I? So why should that be any good? So when he took it, he didn't know that that was the case. This is all now retroactive. So Tirga Marava Aliba Dabaye, Deshavi Shliach. So it must be that he appointed him a Shliach, and that this was his job from the beginning. He just didn't know exactly the rules. It also makes sense, because if he wasn't made into a shliach, how could his truma be a truma? That the Torah uses the word atem to tell you that just like you, your shluchim are the same. Ma'atem l'daitchem av shluchim l'daitchem. That just as you have to know what you're doing, if you're aware of it, so too your shluchim have to be to your knowledge. So what are we talking about here? Going to Shav Yishliach. And he made him a shliach. The Amalei, he said to him, Zil Trum. And he said, go take Truma. The Amalei Trum Mehani. And he didn't tell him which one to take from. So you would think that unspecified, it means he should take from the average types of fruits. And he went and he took from the nicer fruits. Balabayas found the middle, the Amarlo, Kelchel Chatzel Yafos, and he told him to take nicer ones, and then Nimsu Yafos, Mian Shumasa Truma, Vimlavi, and Shumasa Truma. So, and then if he didn't say that, then the Truma is no good. So then the Gemara has another story that's relevant to this, but just before going further. Hi.
Is that drasha for shlichas, the main drasha we have in Torah, that we have shlichas for all mitzvahs? Or only
possibly. So it sounds like from the Gemara and Kedushin, like there is an overlap. Not everyone reads it like that. So there's a lot of open questions in this sugya. One is this a same shlichas that we find by everything, or is it limited to truma? And to what extent is it necessary for truma? There's a lot of confusion about this. It sounds like from the Rambam that you don't really need actual shlichas for truma. Rambam and Hilchos Trumas and Perek Dalet Halacha Gimel, and there's a lot of discussion. How does it match with this Gemara? And the Kesef Mishnah and the Gra suggest he has a slightly different girsa in the Gemara, that it doesn't actually require shlichas, it just requires maybe the knowledge of the Bailim and the approval of the Bailim. There's a lot of ambiguity about this Gemara. And there's also another sugya you should be aware of, is Gemara in Nedarim and Daf Lamed Vav, which asks the question of, can you take truma for someone else? And the Gemara says, on the one hand, it's a schus for them, on the other hand, maybe they want to do it themselves. So the Rishonim asks, it seems to contradict the sugya, which sounds like you need shlichus. And the Tosfos and some of the other Rishonim say in the Dharm that maybe it's only talking about if you're taking from your own, from somebody else. You want to take from your own produce and you want it to work for somebody else's produce also. Torah Mishalal al Shalchavero. But to take from somebody's own produce, from the other person's produce, take away their stuff and give it as Truma, so that you wouldn't be able to do without Shlichus. But the Truma Sadashan and others thought that no, that maybe this Gemara just means that as long as they eventually approve it, then it works even without explicit Shlichus. So that's a big question. The Ramah says, based on the Truma Sadashan, and probably consistent with the Rambam, that if a woman has a worker in her house who's working in the kitchen and she takes challah on behalf of the Balabayas, that it works. And the Ketzos objected to this. The Ketzos said that he doesn't understand that the whole principle of Zafin, Tosus in the Sefer Ksubis, Dafir Aleph, says that Zafin works as a form of Shlichus, because we assume that it's a benefit to the person, that you can take something on behalf of another person through the principle of Zachin, that creates a shlichus, that creates a self-evident agency. And if, normally shlichus needs an appointment, but if I want to, let's say I find something and I want to give it to somebody else, and it's just money, it's just a benefit to that person, so then we say Zachan Yadam Shalobafana. So Tosfos understands that's a form of Shlichus. And not everyone accepted that understanding. Some said it was Exer Sakasu. So Tosfos understands that this, he thinks this shouldn't work for something like taking Truma, because Zachan, in his understanding, only works if you are acquiring something, if you're taking something for yourself. Here you're taking something away from the other. Somebody wants to give me a gift on my behalf, we could say Zachin. Somebody wants to take something out of my property, so however, that shouldn't work. And that objection, the Achiezer and others explain based on the Mekevitz HaMishnah, that we say Zachin li'adam shlobafanav. We don't say Zachin me'adam, that you can give a schus to someone. You can't benefit somebody by taking something away from him. So that's perhaps the nature of the Ksos's objection. Other Achronim didn't think it was based on that. They didn't think that it was based on the idea that you can't take away from somebody and call it a schus, but just that even without taking away, the Ksos thought that the only way you call it a schus means that you acquire something. And here there's nothing being acquired for the person. So that's not called zachin. And similarly, Chaim Shmulevitz understood that it means that you... Same way you could be zocha something for yourself. You could pick up some lost object and keep it. So too, you can do it on behalf of another person. While you have the ability to do it for yourself, you can do it for somebody else. But if something is not based on that, doesn't involve your acquiring something like that, there's no chiddush of zocha. So this was a big machlokas, whether a person can do a truma on somebody else's behalf, or do hafrash of schala on somebody else's behalf without an explicit shlichus. The Rambam essentially has this passage before the whole conclusion, which may have a different gear, so it says that if you took truma from somebody's property and they came and they saw you and they said, Kelfeitz Leyofos, so then the truma is effective. And so they have to figure out, the Nosa Kalim and the others try to figure out how it works with the skamar. Maybe it's a different gear, so or the like. But this was a whole story, the question of whether Zechiyah only works in order to acquire something for yourself, or whether you could even use it in the case of Truma, or Hafrashos Kala, where it involves taking something away from the Baal Bayis. But mathematically, it seems like it's a schus, because halachically, all their produce is going to be prohibited unless they take Truma from it. So even though they could theoretically do it themselves later, which is one of the issues that Gemara in Nedarim brings up,
And maybe he wants to wait and do it himself to do the mitzvah. So there's some ambiguity as to the nature of the schus. But this is a major area in halacha. It comes up also, for example, to give some kind of random examples. So let's say somebody, poskim to talk about a situation, take a more absolute situation first. Let's say somebody is chalil in a coma, comes Pesach time, and he has chametz in his possession. So you want to sell his chametz on his behalf. So normally you'd say you can't sell property against somebody's will or without somebody's consent. I can acquire property for them, but I can't sell their stuff. But here, if you don't sell their chametz, so it's going to become also b'hana. So it makes a lot of sense to say, especially if he's a religious person. If he's not a religious person, you could also make such a case, maybe. It gets a little more complicated, but if the person's a religious person, he's not going to want his chametz to become asur b'hana. So can you make the case that we should be able to say zachin, it's a schus for him to have his chametz sold, and we should sell it without his active consent? So that's a discussion post can have, and then it gets even more complicated. It gets much more complicated, but some discuss that maybe the person's not in the coma, but he's not somebody who cares to sell his chametz. Can you sell it on his behalf also in terms of zachin? Obviously, for a lot of reasons, it gets more complicated in that case. But that's a part of the literature where the question comes up, could you say that zachin doesn't just mean you acquire something for somebody on their behalf, but you can give them a schus even in other ways? Hi.
Does the fact that the person doesn't even have the ability to do it himself play a role?
It does. So the case of the coma is much more...
Right, because usually you can argue true. Like zachin or lo zachin, but at the end of the day he could, like part of our functions, that had he wanted to do it, he could have.
Right, so since you have, when you can fairly have the assumption that if he could, he would want to, so you have a much stronger case.
No, but I mean that part of the reason shlichus works on a regular basis
because
the person had the ability to do it.
Right, so you're saying should make it worse in that case.
Correct.
Right, so that probably not, because you know the Rishonim have an expression, pumahu dekayble, that we normally say that shlichus requires the sender to have the ability to do it himself. And koman d'ihu lo matzi avid, shlichus lo matzi mashva. That if somebody cannot do an action himself, so then he cannot appoint a shliach to do it either. So Jonathan's question is, okay, if a person is comatose, a person is not in a position to do it himself, so then he can't appoint a shliach to do it either. And if you want to say, like Tosfos says, tzchi is mishum shlichus, it might be that tzchi is not mishum, that's like Tosfos favorite to do, the tzchi comes from somewhere else. But if you want to say that tzchi is mishum shlichus, so then maybe it shouldn't work. However, it's questionable if you'd apply the rule in that case, because the expression pumahu dekoyevle means his mouth hurts, which is a way of saying there's some external problem that really he could do it, but right now he's unconscious. Right now it's not that he's a person who's not able to sell his chametz. If he was awake and functioning, he'd be able to sell his chametz. He's just prevented physically from doing it. So it's not clear that would be called not a bar or shivas.
So what would the handicap be?
The handicap is if a person halachically is not able to do a mitzvah, a person's pater for a mitzvah, or something like that. Or I'll mention another example in a minute where you can say somebody's just not capable. We'll come back to it in a minute. But here in the situation where a person has a physical impediment to doing it, so you might call that umdika. You could argue that this is more than a physical impediment, but I can see why somebody would say differently. Hi.
According to the Achronim that are saying that tzchi only works when you're acquiring it for the guy, so what does that mean? You can dip into someone's bank account and buy him like a lulav or something?
No, say it's free. Let's say somebody wants to give somebody a gift.
But you can't use his own,
right.
Like in the Truman case, you can't take,
correct.
You're taking from his Truman, so that's different because...
Right, that's exactly the issue. Right, you can't dip into his bank account for sure. But let's say, at least unless it's a case where it's objectively as well. So let's say it's a lottery ticket, you know it's going to win. Right, so you know if he takes a dollar, he's going to win $1 million. No sane person wouldn't do it. You know, if there's no svara not to do it, so then that's one thing. But anything where there's a decision, so then it's harder to say that's a schus gamar. You know, that's harder to say that that's an absolute schus that you can do on somebody else's behalf. So if somebody wants to give a gift to somebody, which people do sometimes for halacha Shabbos reasons, right? You go to somebody's house and you want to bring a gift on for the meal, but you don't want to give it on Shabbos because the kinyan initially you give it to somebody else. To be zocha on their behalf. So you can do that. You can give a gift to somebody because that's a schus for them. But what if the schus involves taking away something? So that's where the question becomes complicated. So some understand themselves to mean that you can't take away somebody's food to give it for truma or something like that. That's often may have done. And others say he didn't mean necessarily that. He just meant that the whole process of schus means that it requires something. Even if it doesn't involve the opposite, it just doesn't involve acquiring something, then the process doesn't work. And Rama seems to pass differently based on the Trupa Sadesh to allow the situation of the Mishar Eset, so taking from the Chal. Hi.
I've had to do it when
that's
not true, Sophia, that when you're talking about like.
In what situation? The Truma?
Right, yeah, Truma. Now, when you're talking about a regular gift for Shabbos or whatever, then obviously the guy doesn't have a mitzvah to receive a gift, so you're just giving him a gift, and that's it's like it's still for him. It's definitely better for that. But when you're talking about the Truma, mitzvah go yosem v'shlucho, then it's better for him to do the mitzvah himself, so it's not a real zechiah.
Which that seems to be the stadim in the Gemara of Adarim. So if we assume like the other side, the Gemara raises that possibility. So if we assume like the other side, it sounds like you're assuming that it is a schus. But that indeed is the consideration the Gemara asks. So this comes up in a lot of other cases also. One of the most controversial cases is the question of whether it's possible by a get. Right? Let's say you have this situation where somebody was lost at war. And the classical Laguna situation, a person is simply unavailable. His wife, Khalilah Rahman Aslan, is looking at a future without any type of salvation and without her husband ever coming back. So there's obviously a lot of literature about that, and there was a suggestion of Rabbi Yoel Kolatsky that maybe we could invoke Zechiah, that the assumption is that the husband would not want, the husband doesn't get anything by remaining married to his wife when they're not together, and he wouldn't want his wife to suffer, so the assumption could be that he would want to have a get given. And therefore, if he had made a shliach before he left, then he could do it through shlichus. But here he didn't appoint a shliach, so can we say, zochin, that creates a shlichus for him? So that was, as you can imagine, highly controversial, and Rav Herzog was very opposed to this. Rav Herzog, as Rav Schechter relates in Shirim, that Rav Herzog was concerned about another idea, that there is a Rashba in Yiddish. The Rashba says that when something is a schus, when you use zochin, you can use it even if a person you're trying to be zochet to happens to be an outlier, happens to be somebody not average, and you're saying he doesn't want it. He's out there screaming he doesn't want it, the zochin still works. So once you want to say that you could have zechiah by a get, he was worried that people would combine the two, and they'll say, okay, we could be zochet, and even when the husband is here, and he's saying he's not interested, a more contemporary kind of aguna case, and we talk about the word aguna now, that maybe it should work there as well. So Herzog was opposed on a couple levels to this idea. There happens to be a very fascinating tshuva by the Sri Diyesh. Herzog wrote a letter to the Sri Diyesh, and the new printings of the Sri Diyesh, the two volume printings, it's in Chelek Aleph and Siman Tzadi. He's got about a 40-page tshuva about this, where about half of it he talks about this Gemara. So again, you know, we have limited time to talk about Ishaf, but if you want to take a look, he spends about 20 pages talking about this Gemara and Truma and the Rambam and the whole thing, how exactly does this work, and the Tzos and the Truma Sadesh and the whole story, and whether or not that can be applied to the get situation. Could we say that there is a concept of Zechia, and then even in a situation where there is a husband who's alive, is there any svara to say that you could consider it as Chus that outweighs his recalcitrance and the Mizaka get to him? Hi.
How does Gita Puyot Aban Kelecha work if she doesn't want it?
If she doesn't want it, then it's a problem. And if she doesn't.
There's a spark and rely upon that. Like, even if the woman won't receive the get, then they'll just drop it on the property of the lady.
And they'll assume she's divorced, or they'll assume the husband is off the hook?
I don't know. I think that they're divorced.
See, that's a more complicated question. See, the issue is, without getting into all the intricacies of getting in and get recalcitrance and refusal on both sides, but sometimes, you know, for example, in the question of the Heter Meir Rabbanim, so if a husband tries to divorce his wife and she refuses, so sometimes that's part of what goes into a Heter Meir Rabbanim, and by the Sfardim, they don't have a Tekadosh Ben Gershom in the first place, so you don't even come on to that whole discussion. So it could be what you're thinking of is that if she refused to receive it, but he's done his part, then maybe they just leave him alone. I don't know if that's, I don't know exactly what you're describing. Maybe that's the situation. But normally the idea of get to be out in bar kach, the way it's also, it's a different source. In Reish Aleph that explains how that works, that essentially normally whatever the wife acquires, the husband acquires at the same time. So how does it ever make sense for the husband to give his wife a get? So it somehow happens simultaneously that she acquires it at the same time as she acquires her independence to acquire anything. But it's a separate question really from the Zechiyah related issues. So this Rabbi Yehoshua's tshuva is fascinating. He does consider the possibility at least that theoretically one can make a case that the two could work in combination. And in the course of doing that, it just happens to be very relevant to our sukkah. He spends probably 15, 20 pages talking about the ins and outs of this particular sukkah, of what is the implication of Bava Metzia Daf Chav Beis in terms of how Zechiyah works and how Shlichus works and what types of presumptions we can make from Mafreya and the like that are derived from the sugya about Truma. So again, if we were learning Ilmid CSBM, we could probably spend a week or two on this, but it's definitely kedai to be aware of this. And there's even more to say about, we'll see how much we can cover today, but then the Gemara goes on with a few more lines which are relevant. It's also a topic of a lot of discussion that maybe we'll have to continue this a little bit into next week and eventually catch up with everybody. But the Gemara continues and says that Meimar Ramar Zutra Ravashi Ikulu Bustana Damari Bar Isaac, that Meimar Ramar Zutra Ravashi came to this Pardes of Mari Bar Isaac. I see Arise Tamari Vremone. So his Aris, and his Aris is an employee who has a chelik. So he has kind of a complicated arrangement because he's not a straight employee, but he's not the owner either, which is part of the discussion here. And he brought fruits for them to eat. Tomorrow, Rimoni Vishadi Kamai. So, Meima Ravashi Achli, Marzutra Loach. So, Meima Ravashi ate, and Marzutra did not eat. The Hachi Asi Maribar Isaac. So then eventually the owner came out. Ashkechelu Ramal Larise, Milo Isla Rabbarim Hanach Shkirta. So the same kind of thing, Kate Salfi Offal. So I said, how come when you brought out the food, why'd you bring out such schwach food? You should have brought out the better food. So Amrli Amemar Ravashi Marzutra Hashta Milo Achomar. So excuse me. So Amemar Ravashi said to Marzutra. So they said, okay, so now why aren't you going to eat? Batanya Imninsu Yafos Mehan Shumasa Truma. So didn't we say that once the owner says something like that, so then you could assume that it's valid? So Amar Lahachi, Amar Lahu, he said to them, Amar Lahu, Hachi Amar Ravel, Amar Kelcha, Lo Amaru Kelcha, Etzel Yafos, Eli Shuma Bova, Mishum the Mitzvah, Hu Venichle, that we only say such a svara in the context of Truma because that's a mitzvah, and we assume that it is amenable to the owner. Aval Hacha, Mishum Ksifusahu, the Amar. So, it's because of Sifusa that he said that, he's embarrassed and he doesn't want to look stingy, and now his worker has already put him in this situation where the food's out there, so he wants to look more generous, so he's not going to say anything other than that, so he wasn't willing to rely on this. So this opens up another big halachic discussion, which maybe we'll, in the interest of time, maybe we'll fill in a little more detail about next week. And again, there's less to say on Chav Gimel, so I'll eventually catch up with everybody if we spend a little more time talking about the content of Chav Beis and a little bit less on Chav Gimel. Hopefully we'll eventually come back into sync. But, so there is some, first of all, this discussion in terms of eating other people's food. So when you're allowed to do it and when you're not allowed to do it. So the Hagos Ashri and others assume that you're not allowed to take somebody else's food unless you have explicit permission, even if you feel that you know they would be okay with it. And others ask, based on the Ramban, that the Ramban seems to say that it's only because of the Sifusa concern here, but that if they weren't worried, they'd be embarrassed. If, let's say, you really know that a person genuinely is okay with it, then he would have eaten. So it's a whole discussion among the Rishonim and the Shach and others paskin the kula on this, that if you really know Babiru that somebody is okay when you're taking their food, so then you are allowed to. The question is, that doesn't necessarily mean that if you want to take their stuff and acquire something for yourself, that you can do it based on the assumption that somebody would let you. It means that if you want to use their stuff and you know that it's clear that they would let you, then maybe there was such a hatred, but to create a kinyan, maybe not, which creates some complexities. And there's a parallel sugya that the Gemara has in Kedushin about Kedusha Isha, that the Gemara talks about somebody who was also in kind of a worker relationship with somebody else. He was supposed to make beer out of his fruit, and he took one of these fruits and he gave it to a woman who wanted to be Mekadesha, and the host walked in and saw this happening. So once again, the Gemara talks about the Kedushin being no good because it only was acquired 10 after the Balabas said, go get the nicer one, so to speak. So that's a whole discussion. Some of the Rishonim say that from that point on, it would have been valid. But until then, it was unvalid. So since he did the Kedushin before the owner came in, it wasn't valid. So it sounds like from this Gemara that it's not theirs even after he says it's okay, because he only says it because of Sifusa. So that's a whole discussion how to reconcile the two sugyas. So there's a lot of implications about all of these Gemaras, and maybe we'll say a few more words about this next week when we're not keep you late today. But there is a lot to say about all of these passages in terms of taking somebody's stuff for yourself, taking somebody's stuff for a mitzvah purpose, the question of the role of Zachin. We even talk about Geirus. Geirus draws heavily on Zachin. We talk about a child. Ger Katan draws on the principle of Zachin, and that's where it gets into the whole question again of what's called a Zchus and what's not called a Zchus. So you could spend a couple weeks talking about this daf and all of the implications. So we just basically try to outline some of the major issues that come out of this. And so we'll have to catch up next week. Then there's a little bit less to say as we move on. So hopefully we'll catch up. In terms of tomorrow, God willing, so just to lay out what we hope to do. So the possibilities about Yachloku and Shuv Dedaini and the Kol Dov Mevar, if everybody remembers them after the hiatus of a few weeks. So what we tried to do was have a complete unit before Yontif of laying out all those possibilities as a separate yet related sugya, which will, God willing, start tomorrow, is Drarud Vamona. We never defined what that term means. So what we'd like to do tomorrow and the next day is to treat that sugya by itself, but it's also a nice way of reviewing some of the major points that we saw before Yontif, because it will tie back into Yachloku and Kodo and Vire and the like, but it's also an independent sugya. So for tomorrow, God willing, we'll have some Armakomos about the definition and the application of Jarad Mamona, and we'll try to talk about that. And then after that, go on to Migo and related concepts. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Should be only good times. We'll see you tomorrow.